Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm doing this story on a week where hopefully there's no breaking news reason to do it. As in, no crises.
It felt like this was a good time to talk, like not when there's a crisis.
Pre-crisis.
This is like keeping the bar low, not open crises.
That's right. I mean, people usually only pay attention to elections when there's something wrong or it's election day, even though the whole process, as you know, is going on 365 days a year.
This is not a story about Super Tuesday, but the people who make a Super Tuesday possible. The people who make every voting day possible. People whose jobs have gotten much harder in the last few years. The most well-known being Wandrea Shea Moss and her mother, Ruby Freeman, for example. A while back, Rudy Giuliani tweeted a video that showed the women doing their jobs as election workers, counting votes in Georgia. Only the then Trump attorney accused them of filling suitcases with ballots. And long after the FBI and the state cleared their names, the pair faced racist harassment, death threats. Freeman had to leave her home. Moss had to leave her job. And they sued Rudy Giuliani twice for spreading the lie that turned their lives upside down.
Our greatest wish is that no one, no election worker or voter or school board member or anyone else ever experiences anything like what we went through. You all matter, and you are all important. We hope no one ever has to fight so hard just to get your name back.
And yet, when the jury ordered Giuliani to pay more than $148 million in damages for defaming them, he kind of shrugged off what happened.
Do you have any regrets about some of the comments that the women received?
Well, of course, the comments they received, I had nothing to do with. Those comments are abominable. They're deplorable. No defense to it, but I receive comments like that every day. Different kinds of things. I've represented clients who have gotten that from the other side. This is a terrible part of our political system.
Now, death threats should not be part of our political system. And I definitely know that election workers should not have to consider that par for the course. Not in this country, anyway. So today, we're going to talk to election workers about how they have experienced increased scrutiny, how they've built dealing with harassment into their day-to-day work, and why they still do the job as many others in the field, fed up with fear, have walked away. I'm Audie Cornish, and this is The Assignment. In 2012, the Shonda Rhimes Show scandal kicked off a years-long, convoluted plotline about election rigging using voting machines in a small county in Ohio named Defiance. I won't bore you with the details, but I was today years old when I learned Defiance is a real place.
Hi, I'm Tanya Wickman. I'm the Director of Elections in Defiance, Ohio. So if you've watched Scandal, that's the Defiance that it's based on. Not the same equipment. Never happened here.
And yeah, when she saw those episodes, Tanya didn't exactly love them.
Yes, I yelled at the TV going, that's not even what we use.
But nothing from that time could really prepare her for what was going to come a few years later. Just like nothing could prepare Al Schmidt for the fallout of a full-on accusation of corruption and dishonesty from Donald Trump himself.
The former president made a series of accusations directed toward me, directed toward our team and our effort of dedicated public servants who were doing nothing more than counting legitimate votes that were cast.
I feel like you've had to explain this a number of times. I hear in what you're describing the most succinct, clean version of it. Does it get any less weird to say?
No, it really doesn't. It's very easy to tell the truth. There's nothing to keep straight. There's no shame in that. There has certainly been ugly consequences as a result, but no hesitancy on my part talking about it.
That all happened when he helped run elections in Philadelphia.
Now, he's the Secretary of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which means he's in charge of election oversight across the state. I wanted to know how he and Tanya got into the one-time innocuous business of running elections.
So my dad actually worked as a seasonal at the office here for years and years. Someone who comes in and helps like with early voting, that type of staff. And I had just closed my business.
Doing what?
I actually ran a event planning party store, gifts, that type of thing. I had worked in HR at a bank before I had done that.
What I hear is you're good at doing administrative things.
Yes. I love to learn new things. I applied for the job and my husband looked at me and he goes, "Why would you do that? You hate politics." And I said, "But it's not about politics. It's about people choosing who the politicians are." And after a couple of months of interviews and going back and forth, I actually volunteered on election day. And I will tell you, when you get to elections, it really does suck you in. I love what we provide to the voters. I hate what they're doing to it sometimes. But how many people can get up in the morning and say, "I get to let people vote"?
And you know, Tanya, I got to say, I can't think of any better background for running elections than event planning and involvement in human resources, because so much of it really comes down to that. There's no one growing up who is dreaming of one day becoming an election director. And when we do our job right, there's no headline the next day that says election day went smoothly. It's only if there are ever issues or accusations of issues, whether they're based in reality or not, that anyone really pays attention to us. And that's really, at least in my experience, where we want to be, whether you're Democrats or Republicans or big cities or rural counties. You just want to do your job right. If the story the next day is about the referee in a game, then there's an issue if the story the next day is about the referee in a game.
Right.
When did you feel your job change? Like change in a way that felt like this isn't what I signed up for?
Do you want to go first?
It was never really a matter of this isn't what I signed up for, but there was a very clear change. And for me and my team, it happened in the 2020 election cycle. You know, elections are always stressful, and sometimes you encounter sub-turbulence along the way in administering a free, fair, safe, and secure election.
When was the day that you woke up and you were like, "Holy S, I did not sign up for this"?
It was very conspicuous to me, where there was or suggestions that the National Guard be sent in to run elections or anything else. The explicit targeting of Philadelphia, Detroit, Atlanta, a couple other cities, that people should not have confidence in the results. That was very clear to me. It wasn't like a one-day thing. It was a build. And that build was deliberate. It was intentional. It was conspicuous and really put us on guard and helped us, you know, be aware that something wicked this way comes. And that was an effort to try to prevent us from counting our voters' votes.
Was that before or after early November, that November vote?
That was the lead up to 2020. So it began some weeks before then, culminating in the immediate, you know, days and weeks after.
When does that rhetoric turn into stuff that like you're actually having to deal with?
Some knuckleheads drove up from Virginia with a car with a bunch of guns in them to our election center at the convention center because they read or were exposed to misinformation suggesting that there was some sort of truckload of like counterfeit ballots being smuggled in or whatever other kind of nonsense that they were exposed to and consumed. So there's a direct connection between misinformation, disinformation, and the actions that people take that may be well-intentioned. Like those people are probably responding in a rational way to the things that they were believing. It was just those things were untrue.
I think you're really right about it starting in 2020. That's when the climate change of elections began. We have to write an election administration plan for every year for our elections in Ohio. And we thought we had prepared for everything, like tornadoes, water breaks, you know, electrical issues. If we have to move a location because something goes wrong. I mean, we even know where we get the porta pots if the bathrooms go out. And we really sit and think of everything that can possibly happen, except a pandemic. I mean, we weren't prepared for that in any way. Our primary election in 2020 was supposed to be March 17th, which we were kind of excited for because we were going to shamrock the vote and had a whole plan. You know, everybody was wearing green.
Did you just say shamrock the vote?
Right. Okay. You forget I did parties and events. Right? Yeah.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it. I can picture a lot of green.
Yeah,
a lot
we were
of,
all ready.
Yeah.
And the world shuts down the day we're supposed to be having an election. And they change it over to, we do all vote by mail for that primary, which again, not prepared for all of those envelopes and ballots and everything that needed to be sent out. And it got done, you know.
Yeah, but this is also a key point. And Al, I want to bring you in because a lot of the early criticism and suspicions that kick off in 2020 come because of changes that have to be made regarding pandemic quarantines, right? And in particular, you have Republicans saying, look, there are some states that are changing their rules all of a sudden. That's not right. And that sort of starts to percolate the unhappiness around how elections are literally administered. This idea that there are last minute changes to the rules.
Right. In our case, it was in some respects and wasn't in others. Mail-in ballot voting was new to Pennsylvania. It had been passed by a Republican House and a Republican Senate and signed by a Democratic governor in 2019, before COVID was even on the horizon here. It was just that it was rolled out in 2020 with all the COVID sort of things going on. It was certainly something that complicated things. And Tanya knows this well. You lose polling places, you lose election workers, you lost sort of all the rest. So pushing back our primary helped to give us a little bit more time to prepare for that. But elections changed a lot as a result. We also had in Philadelphia significant civil unrest, both during the primary and the general election, that required us
unrelated, to move right.
Completely on both matters were completely unrelated to that election cycle. But the civil unrest that we were experiencing resulted in us having to move a number of polling places to locations that were open, that were accessible, and that voters could show up at and cast their vote.
And then you have the questions with that. Well, did you move it so we couldn't find it?
That's right.
You know,
at the last minute, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's one reason why elections, like you said, they've changed so much in the past couple of years. They've changed and changed for the better. Elections have never been more free and fair and safe and secure than they are now. In Pennsylvania, there's a voter verifiable paper ballot cast for every vote that is used in not one but two audits after every election. And yet you're encountering this level of distrust. But it's no wonder that people have questions. Elections have changed a lot. Their sort of curiosity has been exploited by bad faith actors as well.
People think of elections just on those big days. So you guys are talking about, you know, the civil unrest, the protests over the death of George Floyd, et cetera. All those things were already kind of like mucking up plans, just the sheer logistics of doing what you do. And that's way before November.
That's exactly right. With no do-overs, no redo, there's mail-in ballot voting in a bunch of states. And then there's also election day voting for, in our case, 13 hours. And, you know, as Tanya knows, everything has to be right every time. And the more factors you have sort of impacting that, the more changes that you have to accommodate the last minute, the more likely you are to encounter things where voters could interpret as being nefarious, as being intentional, or as trying to like put your thumb on the scale of who wins and who loses and how by how much.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm talking with Secretary of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Al Schmidt, and also Tanya Wickman, the Director of Elections in Defiance County, Ohio. According to a survey conducted by the Brennan Center for Justice, nearly a third of election officials say they've been harassed, abused, or threatened because of their job. And about 10% said they'd likely leave their job before the 2024 election. But these two election directors in particular, Tanya and Al, have decided to stay. Now, Tanya Wickman, you are, as we said, you're the Director of Elections in Defiance County, Ohio. I remind people about that because you probably already had that like weird vibe hanging over the county name. But I imagine nothing from that period of the TV show could compare to what you have started going through since 2020.
Not at all. And like Al said earlier, COVID coming in and us having to look at how we did all of our processes ended up being an amazing learning experience. But I think coming out of 2020, the environment change, the phone calls, the attitudes, the questioning of election officials. When we got to about 2022, when we had our governor's race after we went through the 2020 election, it was copy and paste across the country. Constant emails of, you know, you're committing treason, this and this and this. And you have to read through all of those. Everyone that comes to make sure there's not a public records request in it. And it's a little disheartening.
You said by 2022, you start to see a real difference in how people are approaching your office. The most innocuous is what?
The disrespect. Disrespect to the poll workers, disrespect to our office, you know, coming in and they're there from 5:30 in the morning till 8:30 at night, not making near enough money for what they're doing. They're giving a service to the community. And to come in and say, well, you know, at least you're looking like you're not rigging it. Well, what are you going to do? Stuff these ballots when you get done. I mean, just little comments.
Is that in a phone call? Is that in an email?
In person, they come in person and voting. You know, we had a young man that consistently didn't like how I ran my office. Started 2020, went on from there. I got called to the polling location because he was throwing one of his, I know this is all rigged, kind of soapbox protest. He had a problem with his ballot, wouldn't scan, so it just got louder. And I said, you know what, you need to take the stub off, put it through, and we're going to move you on your way. Well, it happened to be my mom was working there. My dad was working there. I had two high school kids that were working there for the first time, trying to learn about the process. They're crying over in the corner thinking he's coming back because he's so mad, you know, because that's their first thought now is, well, they're just going to attack. So by the time he left, he had turned me into my Secretary of State, turned me into my commissioners, you know, called our party chair because I told him, you were done voting, you're going to leave now. You know, and my story admittedly is minor compared to a lot of people, but I think, and people say there's PTSD of those who worked the 2020 election. I believe that's true. I mean, there's the mental drain that caused. That was the day I really decided, I told my board, I said, this is it. I'm done today. I can't do this anymore.
What day was that?
The 2022 general election.
Oh, like election day or the day after?
That day I came back and I was like, I'm done. I just can't do it anymore. I think they finally broke me. And they were like, no. Just wait. Think about it. We're not accepting it. We're going to talk about it, which was good because I love what I do. But I just couldn't get past the point that so many people didn't believe we were doing the right thing.
What was the thing that broke you?
I think seeing my poll workers cry. my staff means so much to me. And it was a constant disrespect. Like this, the same kid would stand at a ball game and stare at me just to try to make me uncomfortable or try to follow me out to the car just to, so I stopped going to my nephew's ball games because I just let him do that to me.
You're saying that it was following you outside of your job.
Yes.
Like this threatening atmosphere, you're in a small town. It was following you to the kids' ball game. Like it was a very, it never left you.
Right.
This fear.
Right. It wasn't just an office problem anymore.
Tanya, I'm sorry for what you sort of went through in that election cycle. It's terrible. And I know it sounds dramatic to talk about like PTSD as a result of it, but it's so strange. You know, I'm in elections every day. I talk about elections every day. When people bring up 2020 and what my family and everybody else went through, sometimes I just like, I really choke up and it feels weak and I'm embarrassed when it happens, but it was very real and it was very ugly.
Why would it make you feel weak? I mean, just you testified before Congress. You said, my wife and I received threats that named our children, included our home address, images of my home, and threatened to put their heads on spikes.
I'd like to quickly share with you some of the messages sent to me and my family. Tell the truth or your three kids will be fatally shot. Included our address, included my children's names, included a picture of our home. Cops can't help you. Heads on spikes, treasonous Schmitz. You betrayed your country. You lied. You're a traitor. Perhaps cuts and bullets will soon arrive at, provides my address, names my children, Rhino stole election, we steal lives. There are additional threats that my family asked me not to share today because they are so graphic and disturbing.
That's scary.
It's really very ugly and was certainly not something I encountered before the 2020 election cycle. But it's very important that the people responsible for running elections keep their eye on the ball and they do the job that only they can do.
But Al, you just said that it makes you feel weak to admit it. Like the getting choked up, the feeling about it, it's like, that's kind of shocking to me.
Because they want to get to you.
Yeah.
And if you acknowledge that they've gotten to you, you are in some way gratifying their perverse interest in terrorizing you or your family or anything else. So fortunately, the Philadelphia Police Department looked after my family. I was in a very safe place for many days without leaving or sleeping at our election center. But it's important to not let them sort of get to you. That's the whole point of the thing. It isn't actually, hopefully, in many cases, to act out on the threats. It's to mess with you. It's to prevent you from doing your job or delay the certification of the election results or all the rest. And it's really pretty terrible. You know, but it's so strange. My children are very young. They're largely oblivious to a lot of this stuff. But more than a month later, around the time of certification, we went sledding with two police detectives from the Philadelphia Police Department looking after us to make sure that we were okay.
Al, for you to say you feel weak, that's so true. I mean, I don't break. I'm doing my job. I'm focused on election day. 2022, I came back in my office, had to shut the door for an hour just to get myself to stop crying. And I don't cry because somebody's picking on me, but you're so wore down. And, you know, we had the police department here in the morning and in the evening just so we could walk out to our cars and come into the office. And we're a small town. It shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't have to feel like you have to carry mace in your purse in case if somebody's parked by our cars in the parking lot, we make sure that there's nobody in the car before we leave. That's not normal life in a small town.
Now, Al, correct me if I'm wrong. You are a Republican. That's the party you were affiliated with.
I am, and have been for some time.
So what has this been like? Because it's to the point where I often feel like if I bring a Republican lawmaker on to talk, I almost need to ask them, do you believe the 2020 election was rigged? What is that like for you because it's your own party?
It is at times disorienting to encounter what I have encountered, from members of my own party and others when it comes to sort of spreading disinformation about elections.
Tanya, for you, I know you said that you're not political, but...
Oh, I am a Republican as well.
So what's this like?
In Ohio, all of our offices are run by bipartisan teams. Like, I can't even open a door in my office to our equipment without a fob from another party. So, and we work together every day. We're proof that it can actually happen and you can get something done working with the other party. It's a little disappointing. You know, I go to my party meetings and I listen to people say, well, you know, this has happened and this has happened. And I usually just sat there disappointed. And now I found that I know what I'm talking about and I need to be the one speaking up to say it. I had a gentleman come in actually to our vote center that we have in the office, and the staff came to get me because he was yelling about our Dropbox that we have available for our voters to drop their ballots in. So, you know, we have one Dropbox. It's under 24-hour surveillance at the front of our office. We have to come 7 days a week to empty that every 24 hours in a bipartisan team, lock everything up. It's even uploaded to our website to watch, you know, maybe the paint dry behind it. And I tried to explain. I said, well, it's been there since 2020. You know, this is the security protocol we have. And he dismisses me, like shooing me away, going, I don't need your Twittering explanation. I'm telling you, I'm an American citizen and a veteran, and I want this removed. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to let you check in to vote. If you want to talk about this later, you know, we can take it somewhere else, but not in the vote center. And he goes, you're going to let me vote? And I said, yes, I am. And while you're voting, I'm going to go call the sheriff, and then we'll have him escort you out if you can't have a conversation. So he had left before the sheriff got here, but it gets to that point where I told my crew, you don't have to feel uncomfortable. We are no longer allowing this type of behavior.
Al, can you talk about how already as an elections administrator, you're always coming up with a plan B and C, et cetera, in case something goes wrong? What are the newer things on the list or the things that have moved up in priority as a result of the widespread distrust of election workers?
That's a great question. Governor Shapiro has formed a election threat task force. And a lot of that is really about bringing together federal, state, and local partners so that when we do encounter problems, we know who to turn to. And, you know, going into 2020, we had prepared for a lot. But when I first started receiving threats, I referred them to the Philadelphia Police Department and like the mayor's office. But if everybody knows what everybody's roles and responsibilities are before election day, the more likely that law enforcement can do their job so you can do your job. More broadly, and I think possibly every bit as damaging, is threats that are consumed by people that result in them having no trust in the election results. That is damaging not to people, like Tanya and I have talked about, not damaging to election administration, but damaging to confidence in our entire electoral process and our entire system of government. And I think that's possibly the most harmful of them all.
Tanya, what are some things that your teams are preparing for that you wouldn't have in the past?
I think what we've had to do in our trainings with our poll workers is a little sad that we have to do so much de-escalation training now. We have to train them to watch for something left behind. We have to train them to watch for a car that's sitting outside that doesn't seem like it should be there. Those types of things, you know, the whole see something, say something, which, you know, we've covered in the past, but not as strong as we do now because you just never know what someone might do. I think, you know, going back again to feeling weak, when you have people out there that you're responsible for, you want to do everything you can to secure that for them without scaring them all away from working. So it's a fine balance.
Given all that you've described to us, what is it like trying to find people to do these jobs in general?
It's hard to find people. Like, there's counties in Ohio right now that have had a director's position posted for month or two for deputy director, and nobody's applying. You know, but why would you?
Retention has really been a challenge. We have 67 counties in Pennsylvania, and we've lost about 70 election directors since 2020. That doesn't mean every county has lost an election director, but unfortunately, several counties have lost one after another because you have newer people brought in there that don't necessarily know what they're doing. They're more likely to create a mistake. That mistake is more likely to result in political and other pressure and accusations and all the rest, making them more likely to leave. And no one gets rich doing this. Like, no one is in this for the money.
Agreed.
Everyone is in this because they believe in the importance of it all. And it's, you know, I'm not judging anyone for getting fed up and decide that they want to move on to something else. But I think that turnover has been significant. And it's probably my biggest concern for 2024.
Do you think anything really can be done to get voters who are currently unconvinced that they should trust the current election system? Is there a way to change minds on this?
We can do what we can to combat and mitigate against misinformation and disinformation. But if people stop lying about them, if they start reaching conclusions based on factual evidence of something existing, that would go a long way to restoring confidence and strengthening our democracy.
Tanya?
There's so many ways to look at it. I think the groups that are saying elections are not secure are way louder than the people who are running them, mainly because we're busy running them. But speaking up, I think people are afraid to speak up. I know I've had multiple people say to me, I don't know, you shouldn't talk. I'm no longer afraid to speak the truth because people need to hear what we do.
And can I add one thing to that? That we spend so much time and attention, as we should, to the 30% who do not have confidence in election results and all the rest. But it's equally important that we not ignore the other 70% who, throughout all this, kind of have endured this storm and still have confidence in our electoral process because they're reaching conclusions that are based in fact. Like if you don't have confidence in elections, if all the court cases, if all the rest since 2020 has not brought you to reality yet, your belief in the unreliability of elections is permanent as a tattoo on your arm. It's not something that's going to be easily changed. It's probably here to stay because reality has not had much of an impact on it at this point.
But to challenge you on that, we have witnessed what it looks like when a small percentage of people do not let go of a certain belief. They might, for instance, storm the U.S. Capitol.
Right. And I'm not suggesting 30% is few people. It is a significant number of people. I'm only saying that while we need to be mindful of that and we need to continue telling the truth to them and trying to convince them, no matter what, that there is a 70% out there that do believe in the safety and security of our electoral process, and we shouldn't take them for granted.
And I had like in 2022, my win for the year, I had a gentleman call in and was arguing about what we were doing wrong with elections. And I said, hey, you know what? I'm looking for a poll worker in your area. Would you be willing to come in and learn elections from the inside out? He has worked for me every election since and walked up to me after training and said, I had no idea what you did. I said, okay, we got one. So maybe we can get it down to 29%. I don't know.
I want to ask you one question before I let you go, which is this. How is your health? How are you feeling?
I have a great doctor who told me a couple years ago, you have to quit or you're going to die from the level of stress you're under. And there are organizations out there like Issue One, the Carter Center, those types of things have refreshed my joy in being here. My biggest thing when I said I get to let people vote, I got that from an elections commissioner in Sierra Leone when we were there the day before the election. They took us in with armed guards, military, up to her office to meet her. She had music playing and she said, I'm so sorry about the music. I get to let people vote tomorrow. I'm so excited. I needed that reminder that that's what I get to do. So the stress level has gone down, you know, and it's still stressful. But I, again, would like to remind everybody that is doing this, we get to let people vote. And if it wasn't for people like us, democracy would end.
I totally agree with Tanya. While there's a lot of, you know, ugliness that we might encounter, that role is critical to the functioning of our entire system of government. So yes, there are going to be slings and arrows along the way, but it's worth it.
That was the Secretary of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Al Schmidt, and the Director of Elections for Defiance County, Ohio, Tanya Wickman. That's it for this week's episode of The Assignment. We'd love to know what you thought, any questions you might have, what other assignments you might have for us. Call, text, leave a voice memo at the number 202-854-8802. And yeah, we listen to them all. And we might even use yours on a future episode of our show. The Assignment is a production of CNN Audio. This episode was produced by Carla Javier. Our senior producer is Matt Martinez. Our engineer is Michael Hammond. And Dan DeZula is our technical director. The executive producer of CNN Audio is Steve Lichtai. We also got support from Haley Thomas, Alex Manisseri, Robert Mathers, John Dionora, Lenny Steinhardt, Jameis Andrus, Nicole Pesaru, and Lisa Namorow. Special thanks, as always, to Katie Hinman. I'm Audie Cornish, and thank you for listening.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.